Right now, though, it is time to bring in David Terechuk. It's time for The Media Beat. David has his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And he joins us this morning. Good morning, David.
Well, it's good to be joining you. As you know, I normally say with the pride that only a New Yorker can do and can practice, and perhaps only a New York journalist. I always say I'm coming to you from the live from the media capital of the world. Well, things to be less proud of right now. America is now the world leader in coronavirus cases, surpassing even China and Italy. And of that, I have to say that if America is the epicenter, New York State is the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic in America. And with now, I think, over 37,000 cases in the state and 385 deaths, and the majority of those deaths are here in my home city. I'm afraid New York City is the epicenter of this pandemic now. So it's a grim truth to be reporting on, but that's what we do. And I'm glad to say that here in my part of the world, local media is doing a fine job, and I notice the work that you're doing too. As we were saying last week, local media, local radio especially, I think really comes into its own at trying, testing, extreme times like this.
It's since our northwestern part of the state is connected to New York City.
Oh yeah.
And if you look at Connecticut, and most of the cases in Connecticut come right up from Fairfield County and right up into Litchfield County. There's that line because there is so much cross pollination with people going back and forth that even small towns like Sharon and Salisbury and Kent now have cases on the board. But the big thing to look at. When we look at this, our announcements now finally are getting down to a manageable level I love the way that New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, and Massachusetts basically all have the same rules in effect. Mm-hmm. And Connecticut just lowered no more than 5 people can gather at a time in public places. But I think the statewide cooperation, we talk about this on the air all week long, makes it easier to enforce the actions that each state are doing. The rules are fairly similar, but there's still, you know, David, there's still people that don't understand that the way this disease really travels fast is when a lot of people get together. And you know, you still see instances of people doing really stupid things in and around other people.
Sure, yeah. And the 6 feet rule is more honored in the breach than in the observance, as Hamlet once said about what happens to rules. Rules get broken, yeah. But I think you're right. The tri-state collaboration, or at least coordination of policy, seems to be strengthening the majority consensus. I think that it makes sense. It is, after all, just common sense that you keep your distance when you're living in a time of a viral epidemic, now a pandemic, which is spread by droplets in the air. Droplets that can survive quite some time on solid surfaces when they land as well. So it just makes common sense to observe the rules. And yet, as we know, common sense can be a little uncommon sometimes.
Yeah, we look at the worldview now, and once again, Boris Johnson is now identified as having the COVID-19. Russia now is reporting spikes in cases there. Hungary has a national emergency. Italy.
Don't skip over Britain too fast. Marshall, the Prince of Wales has now been diagnosed with COVID-19 too. Yeah, so it's interesting how he got the test. I saw an interesting little poem that riffed on the fact that it may be a little mystery about how he got tested way up in Scotland. Well, it helps if your mum is queen, was the line.
Well,
I don't want to sound cynical, but a test was available for Prince Charles, and he, in fact, tested positive. So But I interrupted you in a global journey. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the whole thing about these tests is, and this is what angers a lot of normal people, I think, not only in this country but in the world. All our sports superstars are tested. All our politicians are tested. One dumb politician was tested and still went to work anyway.
Rand Paul, yeah. Yes, the man who claims a superior intelligence.
Yeah.
And, yeah. 6 days between him taking the test and then finally getting the result, and he actually went into the Senate gym as well, and you know, had lunch with various people, and they're all very angry with him, as you can imagine. Who knows how many transmissions he's responsible for now?
But you know, people look at this and say, well, if all these people can get tests immediately, why aren't these tests available? And not that testing is going to. The only thing that testing really does is obviously give the government of a particular state or a country an idea which way that curve is heading. Is it heading up or down?
Yeah, test, track, and treat is obvious, and within there also take the obvious precautions about prevention. That's the formula. That's the formula that is known to work. And of course, what is crucial there is that you have the tests. You first of all have the test kits, of course, which we didn't have very early. We in fact had a faulty batch of test kits, so we've been behind the curve, unfortunate word for it, from the get-go, really, in America, and the consequence is feeding through now. And although it's possible to see that our curve is going to crest quite soon, I mean, I wouldn't be totally sanguine and say that it's going to crest in a couple of weeks, which I've heard some people suggesting in the media, but it does seem to be following the pattern that it's followed with every other country, and now that we're out in front, a dubious distinction, maybe we can plan on the basis of it cresting soonish, though obviously not as soon as our chief executive seems to hope for. I mean, one of the most crazy statements to the press this week was our confuser in chief, as I've taken to call him, suggesting that it would be a beautiful thing and a beautiful day to get the country opened up and everybody at church on Easter Sunday. That steps into the world of the delusional, of course, but none of the facts, you know, as indicated by what testing capacity we do have, is going to ever support an idea like that. It's actually 17 days now until Easter. Do we think it's a good time to open up and ease restrictions by then? I think not.
You know, it's interesting. The curve in New York and in the Northeast is going to crest a lot earlier. Now, the thing I don't understand, and what the president doesn't put across, but his medical team that's with him does put across after he's finished speaking, is that even when you get in states that have one, two, or three, or four, just single number coronavirus cases, what they don't understand is if there's one, there's two. If there's two, there's three. If there's three, there's four. Those states will crest later on. It's like a rolling wave, like when a tsunami starts out in the middle of the ocean. It crests at different places at different times, and that's what's going to happen in this country, and that's what makes the statement
about... Yeah, there's a cascade effect at work here, and it will. It has an inevitability about it, as you say. You know, we saw it very graphically in this last week in New York City, with numbers doubling almost daily. That's why it's called an epidemic, and eventually, when it covers the whole world, a pandemic. It's very hard to really credit the sanguine and Pollyannish statements that come out of the White House briefings every day. These White House briefings have turned into a kind of distressing effort by journalists nothing too different from what's been going on the last 3 years. But the important job is to sort the wheat from the chaff, work out what is information that we can believe and it usually comes from the experts, and what information, if that's what it is, that comes from the overall chief executive himself, we can absolutely discard. It's nothing new. I mean, this political dimension of the pandemic, the leadership question that it throws up, is nothing different from what's been true ever since the narcissist in chief came into power. We have to, adjust all our thinking, all our appreciation of reporting by this fundamental fact that the main funnel of information in traditional times, the President of the United States standing at the lectern in the White House, is just not credible anymore.
It's interesting. The President has put out a cease and desist order for a commercial. I'm going to play a portion of the commercial that is airing on TV stations, and we can comment about it.
The coronavirus.
This is their new hoax.
We have it totally under control. It's one person coming in from China.
One day it's like a miracle, it will disappear.
When you have 15 people, and within a couple of days it's going to be down to close to zero, we really think we've done a great job in keeping it down to a minimum.
I like this stuff. I really get it. People are surprised that I understand it.
No, I don't take responsibility at all.
That is a cease and desist order that is being sought by the president and his campaign committee for TV stations to play that ad. But what's interesting about that ad, and what I've said to my friends, whether they're conservative or liberal, whether they're pro-Trump or anti-Trump, is that being in broadcasting full-time since I've been 17 years old, there's been plenty of times after I've said something, I've been bit in the rear end a week or two or a month or two later. It happens to you, and when you have a 50-year career, it's obviously happened more times than not, but I'm not the President of the United States, and you can't run away from those words. You know, they're his words.
Absolutely. I think his cease and desist order, when the application gets into onto a judge's desk or while the judge is sitting on the bench, I think the likelihood of it getting anywhere is remote. I mean, the first words in any judge's mind, and confronted with those particular quotes and the rehearsal of those quotes again and again, ending up with the president saying he does not take responsibility, which is so far from the old the buck stops here theme about the Oval Office, the judge's mind will inevitably go to that hallowed phrase of First Amendment cases like this will be. Quite simply, it's fair comment. The phrase is fair comment. I mean, it seems pretty damn fair to me.
Well, you know, I it's his own fault, and he's not the greatest at these conferences. He's great at rallies for his folks. He's truly a superb communicator at his rallies. But what he should do, and I've said all along, I don't know why they can't convince him, when they have these updates on the coronavirus, just have the experts up there. Because he all of a sudden thinks he can go off on these riffs and say things that are inconsequential. But when you're President of the United States, anything you say is not inconsequential, it's consequential.
Well, that's a comment on the man's capability as a as a leader. I should say that in my own column this week, I've written about what I saw a couple of days ago here in New York City. There is a gigantic day counter, a countdown clock is what it is, that beams out a numerical image over my patch of the city's East River, and it's basically counting down the days until a new presidential term of office starts on 20th of January 2021, and it was striking a couple of days because that big clock registered 300. So it's only 300 days until we have either a new president or this president is swearing in for his second term. And that, I think, ought to be something that concentrates our minds. Essentially, what that clock was telling us, I think, It's easy to forget in all the storm and drang of the current coverage of the pandemic, which of course is top of everybody's mind. But it's easy to forget that while all of our virus-threatened lives matter, politics do still matter too. And I haven't seen many, if any, media outlets reminding us that this decision is still in front of us, and we have evidence of plenty in front of us every day coming out of the briefing room, the largely unused briefing room until it was put back into use again for these daily circuses, as they could be seen to be. And what's coming out of that room gives us plenty of information to base the decision on which to base our decision on November the 5th, which, by the way, is November the 3rd, I'm sorry, which is 227 days to Election Day. It's very close, and we're in danger of forgetting it.
It's what's also interesting is how the primaries have been pushed back. And you know, I was born in 1952. All right, but I was very aware of what my parents and my grandparents went through in World War One and Two. I looked at rationing coupons when I was a kid that my grandfather had saved. I looked at what Americans had to do in World War Two to catch up and the sacrifices that had to be made. And yes, you can move ahead to 9/11, where the country was basically shut down for a while. But the people that are now, I'll say 20-something to 30-something, they aren't aware of the sacrifices that have been made in the past by this country for war, for a terrorist attack, for the Great Depression. And they seem to be last on the boat to learn that you need self-sacrifice. You need to follow these rules. It's not just the government telling you. This is an important factor of being a citizen and a neighbor of other people is, you know, you got to follow these rules.
And I'd say, Marshall, too, in that same area of comment, that just a point that came up when I saw this massive clock registering 300 days until the next presidential term starts. That huge clock was erected in a very particular place. It's on the shore of Roosevelt Island in New York City, which is named, of course, for President of the United States, Franklin D. Roosevelt, who is highly regarded for his very, very impressive, I'll put it at the least, very impressive crisis management. You mentioned the Depression and World War II. Well, FDR was a calming voice through both of those horrific events, which lasted, of course, many years. But the leadership that he demonstrated there was well worth, was well rewarded. And you know, if he hadn't died, I mean, he did end up with more terms than presidents normally do. And it wouldn't be possible to have as many terms now as he had. But he was well regarded, and the public wanted him back because he did a very good job in very, very testing times. This president in testing times, well, it's up to the public to decide whether they think he's doing a good job. There's ample evidence on which to base that decision now.
It's very interesting. I sit here as somebody who has supported Bernie Sanders from his original run. I've known about before then. All of a sudden, the Republicans are very quiet on socialism as we have a $2 trillion package put together to try to salvage the economy.
What about centrally directed economy? That sounds suspiciously like socialism, doesn't it?
You know, it's so interesting yes, I know tough times demand tough decisions, but this is a big problem about this country is that instantaneously, because of social media, things are tossed around. People can talk about socialism and its evils, but when you mix in socialism, democratic socialism, with the economy that we have, they are things that go together and do benefit people, hopefully, in the end, even though it's $2 trillion more in the national debt that has been added.
Yeah, well, the dilemma all the time is whether you... it's not necessarily totally exclusive, these two choices, but do you fight the virus or do you shore up the economy? Well, it's perfectly possible to do both, and it may well be vital to spend enormous amounts of money out of the public purse and put in peril, you know, our balance of payments and all the indicators that we get concerned about, and money market, supply side market people will get very upset about that, but in the end, it's perfectly feasible to argue that sure, we spend an awful lot of money now, but at least we set the boat steady for a very difficult time, and we're better placed for a recovery once people are able to go back to work.
You know, it's interesting. I looked at our stats in Connecticut here, and we are kind of going against the grain here. The highest population that has contacted the COVID-19 virus is 50 to 59. The second highest is 40 to 49. And the third highest is 30 to 39. And then the fourth highest is 60 to 69. That's totally out of whack with basically what's up. But here in Connecticut and Massachusetts and in New York, the people who are dying from this disease are all, except for a very few, 70 or over.
Yeah. Well, I suspect that the reason why those younger age groups get to the top of the of that particular graph is that Connecticut, I suspect, is a more multi-generational household state than some others. I think younger people are in contact with older people a little more than they would be in some states.
It's an interesting time to be involved in the news. You spin around and look around, David, and it's a time where the world, we've said, because the internet, the world is now a much smaller place than it used to be. But the good side of it is that when a pandemic like this comes, being that countries are connected more likely, I think there's less fear. There's still fear out there, but there's less fear because so many different countries are dealing with it as a whole. So I think there's less fear of the unknown.
Well, I hope you're right. And the problem with social media is that it's perfectly capable of fanning the flames of fear.
Yep.
And that, of course, is what unscrupulous people will use it for. Unscrupulous or just stupid or panicky people themselves, people who veer towards panic and a bit like the president, really, just can't shut their mouth when they've got something to say, no matter how unthought through it might be. And the instantaneous quality of the internet, and in particular the social media corner of the internet, it's a huge sway of the whole internet scene, isn't it? Social media is all too often a playground for the mischievous and the malicious, and certainly for misinformation.
Is one final question before we go, and you can. It appears that we are fumbling the ball here, we're 5.5 weeks later where we're actually dealing with it where we could have. Is it the same in Great Britain? Is it the same in Europe?
People didn't react universally with dispatch and speed from the get-go. One of the few countries that did was South Korea. And that went, in relative terms, pretty well. They got ahead of it's not exactly ahead of the curve. They still had to chase the curve like everybody else, but they're much closer to heading it off. And now it's looking like it's, if not necessarily under control, it's certainly very well contained compared with what it was to begin with, and certainly compared with any countries in Europe. Britain was slow. Britain was a very, very, and this again is the top man's responsibility, I think, very uncertain for quite some time about whether shutting down schools would be a good idea or not. And indeed, a lot of waffling went on before Britain ended up with its restrictions that we have now. And the same was true across much of Europe. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there is a sense of we're not alone in this. America has had its problems adjusting to the real facts of the situation. And as you say, something like 5 weeks or more behind in doing what we could have done earlier. But as you say, we're not alone.
No, and what's interesting about this is China is so infused now in the world economy. You would have thought when the first initial reports came out of China that the rest of the world would have taken them more seriously than they did when those first initial reports came out. That got everybody behind the ball. And also the Chinese weren't exactly the most forthcoming in the beginning of it all. But not to begin with, you're right. Well, I guess we can mash this one to death if we wanted to for a long time.
I'm afraid so. Yeah, I'm not a great fan of monotopic journalism. Yeah. I'm afraid, but of course, what other story is there that people want to hear about? This is top of mind for everyone, so we're talking about it again here.
All right. Well, David, take care of yourself. Stay safe down there in New York City, and we'll speak to you next week.
We certainly will.
All right, take care. That is David Taratruk with The Media Beat. You can find David at his own website, themediabeat.us. You can also find his commentary on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on on-demand, click on The Media Beat with David Taratruk.